Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Our First Amendment rights to speech and religion are among the pillars of the American Democratic Republic. But what about the idea that with freedom comes responsibility? Viral videos and social media have spread hateful messages around the globe within minutes. Most notably, the low-budget, bigoted, anti-Muslim film that sparked violence and death in Libya recently and spread throughout the Muslim world last month. Many Americans believe that is just the price of freedom of speech in this country. But the rest of the world is not beholden to our Constitution, let alone the First Amendment. Several Muslim nations asked the UN last week to enact an international law against religious defamation. They've been asking for years. So is there a balance somewhere between our freedom of speech and respect for the religion of others? Our guest today will try to address those questions. First of all, we have Associate Director of the American Civil Liberties Union, Gary Daniels. Welcome to the show, Gary.
Hi, thanks for having me, Ann.
And also, we're joined by OSU Professor Emeritus of Law and First Amendment expert, David Goldberger. David, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here, Ann.
Coming up later, Harris Tarrin, Director of the Muslim Public Affairs Commission's D.C. office, will be joining us. Question for our listeners, should there be limits on speech when it comes to religion? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or go to our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. So last week, Pakistani President Asif Ali Zardari asked the UN General Assembly to enact a blasphemy ban. What is a blasphemy ban, and how far can such a ban in the UN actually reach? David Goldberger?
A blasphemy ban or laws against blasphemy as they exist throughout the world other than the United States prohibit the contemptuous or insulting or denigrating statements, language, or communications about a religion or aspects of a religion.
Isn't the problem defining any of those terms?
Well, that's basically one of the reasons that the U.S. Supreme Court threw out an effort to censor a movie that had been, I think it was in New York, had been basically it was insulting. Many Christians found it insulting, and the court said that basically that the language defining blasphemy was simply too vague, and therefore you could never determine what it was that would be blasphemous. So that it's pretty easy to find anything blasphemous if because it's based on the subjective reactions of individuals. So the court has been very clear that you can't prohibit it in the states.
Gary Daniels, where does the ACLU fall into place on this kind of an issue when it comes to things like the blasphemy ban and when they're looking at a worldwide ban like that?
Mm-hmm. Well, for 90-plus years, the ACLU has been the preeminent free speech First Amendment organization here in the country. And we stake out quite purposefully a position on one end of the spectrum that says speech is a good thing. The more speech, the better. But that doesn't mean that everybody's always going to like the speech that they are hearing. And so when it comes to anti-religious speech, well, you can pretty much substitute religion with any number of subjects or traits or characteristics or beliefs. And this just happens to be the latest controversy. So in the past, it's been things having to do with race, with gender, those sorts of things. And so I think this is the latest controversy with regards to the free speech that we're seeing.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about a proposed ban, a proposed blasphemy ban. They were asking for it at the UN. They've asked for it before. It's not new. It was just triggered again by the recent bigoted anti-Muslim film, if you want to call it that, that made the rounds on YouTube in recent weeks. What do you think? Should we have a blasphemy ban in the UN, and should it apply to the United States? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. There seems to be a special—yeah, sure.
The case that I was talking about was Burstein versus Wilson, and under New York law, the film was found to be sacrilegious. And using that word, and the Supreme Court said that using that kind of language, the censor is set adrift on a boundless sea amid a myriad of conflicting currents of religious views. And it just simply said there's no way to fairly apply such a standard, and therefore you can't do it.
There's the standard of screaming, yelling fire in a crowded theater when there is no fire.
Right.
There's that standard, and it says that there at a certain point you can endanger people with your speech. And what about the idea that we know that when something like this emerges, when somebody says something publicly that is offensive to Muslims, that there are elements out there that are going to take advantage of that or be directly assaulted by it and because of the insult, lash out and hurt somebody else?
That's the toughest question that America is having to face right now in these times. Because we know from the death of the ambassador in Libya that there are certain folks whose views are so rabid and who are so opportunistic that they will kill in an effort to protect their view or express their view of religion. We have a clear and present danger standard. We can elaborate that, but the incitement has to be directly linked to unlawful consequences under circumstances in which they're likely to occur, but imminently and linked, so that in this country we've set a standard that basically says that an abstract statement, which is what was in that awful video, is insufficient to trigger any law violation or justify any prosecution. The question is, are we going to completely rewrite our legal system or revamp our legal system because of the fanatical reactions and opportunistic political reactions of people in another country? In other words, is the United States going to have to say, well, our legal standards are going to have to track what's going on the other side of the world? I certainly hope not.
Mm-hmm. It's been a problem throughout the history of free speech in this country. If you allow the most, and look, it's all clear. There's speech out there that offends all of us. Maybe not the same speech, but we can all find things out there that offend us, certainly. But there becomes a very real problem if you allow the person or the people who are the most offended on any particular subject to guide free speech law. And the court many times has rejected exactly that, because if you do allow that, I think probably the most analogous situation where you see this going on is the rules for broadcast media, whether it's television or the radio. The internet, it's been much more kind of Wild West as compared to TV or radio, but that doesn't mean that there haven't been attempts to silence voices on the internet. When President Clinton was president, he passed and signed the Communications Decency Act, which would have outlawed certain categories of speech on the internet. But I think that's probably the most analogous to what we see when it comes to allowing people who are offended to guide the speech that is allowed in American society.
Dale in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Dale.
I agree with the constitutional comment that you made, but we virtually cannot control what happens around the world. And I refuse to accept the fact that our First Amendment right can be changed to accept, blasphemy of religion, because who knows? Worst case scenario, corporations and unions would not be able to speak politically. Heaven forbid.
Well, you're laughing now. Are you being facetious?
Well, no, you're talking about the First Amendment right. Okay, it's there. It should stay there unless you're screaming fire. But if this changes in this country, and we can't control what goes on in the world, if it changes in this country, change the Constitution, it's unheralded. Or if a decision is made about blasphemy, it would change the actual constitutional amendment in the Constitution. Who knows where it could go? It's a slippery slope. And, of course, like I said, the next thing you get is corporations not be able to speak freely. with their money. Political overtones. I'm sorry.
It's okay,
I tried
Dale.
To be subtle, but it didn't work.
It happens. It's a season. Thanks a lot, Dale.
Sure.
Okay, so there's other kinds of speech that is regulated to a certain extent. Someone can't just come in the office and start uttering sexist type of speech. They're going to get in trouble, and it's legal to penalize somebody who utters sexist or racist speech in, say, an office or, I don't know, I mean, anywhere, pretty much. What's the distinction there?
Well,
it doesn't hurt anybody.
Well, and if you said something that was racist or sexist on the air, you would be criticized, but
right.
You couldn't be prosecuted. And now when we talk about having sexual harassment, for example, in an office setting, now you have a captive audience,
okay.
and a circumstance that's very different. That's why when you talk about what happened with the innocence of the Muslims, or I think that was the name of the Innocence of Muslims video. It was out there for a couple of months before all this happened, so that it's really difficult to talk about the cause and effect in the same way that when you do when you talk about falsely crying fire in the crowded theater. There are a lot of people that have chance to think, talk, and do what they want to do 3 months later, and in this case, they did something terrible in Benghazi. But to say that the video itself was causal in the same way that falsely crying fire in a crowded theater is causal is simply not logical.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad your caller brought up the term slippery slope because it's a term that the ACLU is fond of using. And we see it in many areas of constitutional law where if you allow one person to be silenced or one group to be silenced, it's only a matter of time before that stretches to other people, including, mainstream society. And of course, the people who are most likely to have their voices silenced are those people who are on the fringe with controversial ideas for whatever reason. And so now we see free speech. It's nice to constantly remind ourselves of how wonderful it is that we have the First Amendment here in this country. And we keep revisiting it. And we're revisiting it right now. And I think when we the last time we revisited it was in the past year or two, when you're talking about two pretty much on the opposite sides of the coin groups when you're talking about Occupy protesters and you're talking about Tea Partiers, both of who have a habit of going out and exercising their First Amendment rights and getting other people upset as a result. But we take a look at it and we say, when you don't like speech, the answer to it is more speech. Saying you don't like it, boycotting companies, those sorts of things. But the answer should never be, except for the situations, the very few situations, the answer should never be that you prosecute or you imprison or you fine somebody for that speech. And, there are those differences. There are those distinct situations out there where we've said, it is okay to do that, the fire in a crowded theater situation. But we need to always be very vigilant and guard that doesn't go further than it is now. Because the thing about the slippery slope argument is the ACLU uses it a lot, but 99% of the time, we're exactly right.
We're talking about the calls for a worldwide blasphemy ban in the wake of that film that circulated over the last couple months, The Innocence of Muslim. If you have a strong feeling about that, give us a call, 614-292-8513. If you think there should be a blasphemy ban, give us a call. We want to hear from you as well, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
The Syrian army blanketed rebel fighters with a text message on Thursday, "Game over." They might well have replied, wishful thinking. The Civil War's already dragged on for 18 months, killed tens of thousands, and forced even more to flee to neighboring countries. I'm Neil Conan, the Civil War in Syria, plus our weekly read of the Opinion Page. Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 until 4 on 89.7 NPR News. 57 degrees, partly sunny skies today, a high of 67. There's a chance of rain tonight, a low of 57. Showers are likely with maybe a thunderstorm on Tuesday, a high of 74. Support for 89.7 comes from Marburn Academy, a leader in college preparatory education for ADHD and dyslexic students, hosting a community parent seminar, Solving Reading Problems, Tuesday, October 9th at 7 p.m. More at marburnacademy.org. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We are talking about the proposal for a worldwide blasphemy ban. Comes after the wake of that video that circulated on YouTube for about 3 months now that we know of. The man behind the video has been arrested, but for parole violations, not for his role in the video. Because
that's a worry.
In and of itself, you think.
Who knows why he was arrested, but they say it's
they
for,
say
parole,
it's for parole violations, right? But that's an interesting point. But let's talk. We think that most of what the Western world embraces our concept of freedom of speech, but that's not necessarily the case. Let's talk about that for a minute. You were just, David Goldberger, you were just talking about Ireland, for example.
Well, Ireland has a blasphemy ban. The United States actually is the only country in the world that has protections against offensive language and blasphemy and, speech that encourages racial hatred. It's the only country in the world that protects that speech. So we're singular, and the rest of the world looks upon us as an outlier. I'm quite proud of that fact.
Well, sure. If you look at blasphemy laws, I think David would agree with me that we're in no imminent situation where we're going to see an anti-blasphemy law introduced and passed, whether in Ohio or in the United States. But if you look at just the ramifications of it, here we are in Ohio. It's a presidential election year, and if you read message boards or newspaper comments or what have you, you will see people railing against Obama for saying that he's Muslim, which even if he was, not that there's anything wrong with that. Mm-hmm. And the flip side, you see people talking about Mitt Romney's religion, Mormonism, as if there's something wrong with it. If you passed an anti-blasphemy law, then you're potentially talking about a whole giant pool of people across the country that would be subject to it. And so if anybody thinks at all that, maybe an anti-blasphemy law isn't such a bad idea, or a blasphemy law, I should say, but there would be an awful lot of people that the ACLU would be defending at that point, I have a feeling.
But in Ireland, the anti-blasphemy law is just against the Catholic Church?
Well, I believe so. Religions? I believe so, but let me give you an example. In England, after Salman Rushdie published the Satanic Verses, mm-hmm. he was sued for blaspheming Islam, and the charges were dropped, or he was acquitted, on the ground that British blasphemy laws in force at the time applied only to denigration of Christianity. Hmm. So you're dealing with a very, very particularized view of who's good guys and who's bad guys.
And we cannot particularize it in the United States because of the way our Constitution is written.
Right.
That's right. I mean, and if you look at some of these, David and I were talking earlier, and if you look at some of these laws, and I said to David, I said, well, do they also protect people who might be atheist or agnostic if people start bad-mouthing their beliefs or lack of beliefs? Mm-hmm. Well, of course, those laws don't protect that. And that's something I think judges, no matter who they are or where they serve, would have, as you pointed out, a very real problem with that sort of law.
Frank in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You're Muslim?
Yes, I am.
Well, welcome.
I'm part of a group called Muslims for Progressive Values in Columbus. And I wanted to call to say that in America, Muslims are free to be the kind of Muslims their conscience calls them to be. Whereas in most Muslim majority countries, they are not free because they don't have freedom of speech there. Many, many really powerful heroes in Muslim history were killed by fellow Muslims because of things that they said. And these blasphemy laws are not Islamic.
Well, in fairness to, history, the historical balance, the blasphemy laws in the Middle East, which are really upsetting all of us, are not unique to Islam.
Of course not.
Yeah, and there has been a long history of blasphemy laws in Europe, in Western Europe, and, as I cited an example of it, that's much more recent, but it's the human condition, I fear.
Yes. Well, I just wanted to say that there are Muslims who are progressive, who have progressive values here in Columbus, who disagree vehemently with all this nonsense about killing people for things that they say.
Frank, what's the name of your organization again?
Muslims for Progressive Values Columbus.
Okay. Thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. About a year ago, Pakistan's Minister for Minority Affairs, Shahbaz Bhatti, was murdered for speaking out in favor of amending the nation's blasphemy laws.
So I wanted to appeal them, yeah.
Right. I wanted to get that example out there right now. There's people fighting them, even in the countries where they're the strongest, and they're endangered by fighting them.
Well, one of the questions that I've always had about, and I'm now this is a little bit out of my expertise, is that sometimes I get the feeling that the violence that purports to attack blasphemous statements and blasphemous views is a subterfuge, and that it's driven by the desire of the agitators to get political power and to assert political control. And the use of blasphemy laws are very opportune because you can squash all kinds of statements that and people that might be your political enemies.
Lawrence and Hilliard, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Lawrence.
Thanks, Anne. I'll make this very quick. I'm a certifiable agnostic. The silliness of religion is my own personal opinion. But any of my friends, Muslim, Christian, Jew, Hindu, where the idea of an institutionalized bigotry is taken into account, I will defend to the death. And that's where the point of this is so silly. There's a difference between free speech and institutionalized bigotry. And you can usually find that the areas of the world where most of this anti-blasphemy law drive comes from the very areas of the world where that idea of institutionalized bigotry is most prevalent. So we can only remember, and I'll let you go, that Pakistan, neighboring Afghanistan, neighboring Iran, is one of the conduits of the world of misogynist culture, anti-religious freedom, anti-Jewish freedom, and anti-free speech movement. So I think it gets down to the point where whether the UN does this or not, there is no debate, because might makes right, and this country does not portend to those kind of movements. Thank you.
Well, I think as David pointed out earlier, nobody has a lock on different ideas and ways they express or not express themselves. And it's nice to sit around here in 2012 and have discussions that I think we all take for granted here in the United States about everybody's right to speak freely. But, the ACLU over the years has lost supporters in large numbers because of some of the free speech cases that we have taken on. David knows that very well. What that resulted in was basically what has turned into a decades-long educational process of saying, you don't have to support the person speaking, but there are many important reasons why you should support their right to free speech. And it's, you know, I think most of society here in the United States has gotten that. But that doesn't mean that over the last decades, the last couple hundred years, that we haven't been fighting this with regards to offensive speech and movies and books and music and political speech and how long you can keep a yard sign in your yard and what can you publish as a newspaper. I mean, you know, this is, you know, as I'm always fond of saying, the ACLU will never go out of business for a lack of work. So even though, you know, many of us have gotten on board with this idea of free speech, every day still in our office we're getting complaints about government limiting people's right to speak.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about free speech. What do you think about the proposal for a worldwide blasphemy ban? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Of course, in 1977, Professor Goldberger, you won your first case before the U.S. Supreme Court in the Nationalist Socialist Party of America versus Village of Skokie. I was a sophomore in college at the time. I remember it very well because one of my floor mates was from Skokie and talked about it a lot. I mean, usually you're not as plugged in on those kind of things at that age. But tell us about that, because that caused a lot of hard feelings. But interestingly, Skokie rebounded in an interesting way.
Well, I was the legal director of the Illinois American Civil Liberties Union, and we were called upon to represent Nazis who wanted to hold a picket in front of or hold an assembly in front of the village hall in Skokie, which was a community with an enormous number, a very high percentage of Jews, and the largest concentration of war survivors and camp survivors per capita in the country. And I represented the Nazis to assert their First Amendment rights in the courts, and we won, basically. And I was called every name in the books. I was threatened, but we won, and that was the important thing.
And the party never did do their march. Is that right?
Or was cut in the 11th hour for them to. I mean, it's pretty complicated, and I think it goes beyond the subject matter here today. But the federal government, Justice Department, stepped in at that point and asked my client, our client, the ACLU's client, whether or not there was some other place that he would be willing to hold his assembly, and if, you know, was there some deal that could be cut. And much to my amazement, he said if he could hold it downtown in downtown Chicago, because he'd been blocked everywhere, and that they would repeal certain group libel laws and other laws and stop other laws that were going through the General Assembly in Illinois, that he would move his assembly, and he did. And there were 25 of his people and about 1,500 police and about 5,000 counter demonstrators.
which is an interesting observation.
But
too.
That's the opposite of what's going on in the Middle East, unfortunately.
Skokie, though, I was reading an article, I think from 2009, that Skokie since has erected a monument.
I think they have a museum there, too.
In response to all of this, and the point being that the only way to fight blasphemy is to, or to fight free speech is to. I mean, speak as well.
Yeah, hate speech. I think Gary said it before, the best antidote for hate speech is more speech.
Evan in Dublin, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Evan.
Hey there. Believe it or not, right now I'm in a library, so I guess that's kind of a poetic justice or whatever. I personally think that banning a local ban, a state ban, a countrywide ban, a worldwide ban, banning free speech is just absolutely ludicrous. I mean, when you ban things like drugs, violence and other problems flare up like crazy. Banning free speech is probably going to lead to more violence and more anger towards the individuals that are trying to be protected. I know, honestly, I kind of feel that way. If I was told not to say something, I'd really want to say it a lot more, even if I didn't believe it. Oh, I know we have a lot of callers, so I'll leave. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Evan.
That's very true, to use it in another setting. Many people, I'm in my 40s, like many people, I misspent my youth listening to lots of controversial heavy metal music and what have you. And the easiest way to get me and my friends to look up an album was to have parents and other people start talking about how bad it was and kids shouldn't listen to it or you shouldn't be able to see that movie. There was nothing that got us off the couches faster looking for a particular movie or book or record or what have you than to have parents and everybody else start bad-mouthing it. And oftentimes when a free speech controversy erupts, it does exactly what your caller was talking about and what we've been talking about here. It leads people to that rather than. So, sometimes I'll amend my previous statement and say the answer to speech is that you don't like is more speech. And sometimes it's just ignoring that speech and it will go away. Because sometimes you can tend to inflame the situation, not necessarily in a bad way, but you keep that controversial speaker going by paying attention to them.
But that's something we know culturally because we've kind of grown up with it. There's many places that have never had the free speech, and they just don't know, and they can't understand how we can live in a place where you can be insulted at every turn.
Well, there are a lot of people in this country that really, when it comes to talking about the problems of racial vilification and so forth, and religious vilification in another country, they're very staunch First Amendment supporters. But when it's on their doorstep, they whistle a different tune. Most people in the country didn't want the Nazis, they were opposed to the Nazis holding their public assembly in Skokie, and it was a question of the law standing up and being powerful enough to restrain those who would respond with 2x4s and baseball bats.
We have a quick email from Tom. He says, okay, what do we do when religion A's beliefs and religion B's beliefs are contradictory and mutually blasphemous?
I think you're getting into the problem with blasphemy laws right there. It's, religions have, since the dawn of history, tended to compete against each other in the marketplace of ideas and beliefs. It all goes towards we can settle this as adults and have a dialogue and use our own right to free speech to speak out against things. But you really do need to make a distinction there and draw the line of prosecuting people for that. The sort of nice thing about the silver lining of this most recent controversy is it's exposing us as Americans to what free speech laws are around the world or are not. And I hope that the opposite is happening. I hope that people around the world becoming more aware of how diverse and protected free speech is here in the United States. I hope in the coming months and years we start to see some changes in these other countries because they look at the United States. And while our protections of free speech is it's not absolute and it's not perfect, I think we're seeing in many respects it's better than other places around the world. And just like it took us decades to come along and realize that you let controversial people speak and express themselves, maybe some of this will happen in other parts of the world as a result of this controversy.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher. We will return to our conversation about the proposed worldwide ban on worldwide blasphemy ban when we return.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, voter ID. We'll look at the great battle of 2012 over who will have access to the American ballot box. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point.
On Point begins this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. Stay right here in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock. Hour 2 of All Sides begins, and early voting kicks off in the Buckeye State. A discussion of early voting from 11 till noon on 89.7 NPR News. And you can support WOSU Public Media by becoming a volunteer. We're looking for volunteers to take calls of support from listeners during the upcoming 89.7 NPR News Fall Membership Drive. If you are interested in becoming a volunteer, visit WOSU.org/volunteers or call 614-292-9678. 57 degrees and sunshine today, warming up to a high of 67. There is a chance of rain for tonight. Support for 89.7 comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation in supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We are talking about the proposed worldwide blasphemy ban. It came out. It's been there before. This is not new, but it was reignited, or the pressure for it was reignited in recent weeks with the airing on via YouTube of a bigoted anti-Muslim film. Joining us now from Washington, D.C. is Harris Terran, director of the Washington, D.C. Office of the Muslim Public Affairs Council. Welcome to the show, Harris.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you for having me.
First of all, we were talking about the cultural differences, and we're trying to get our arms around and grasping the context of why people in other countries resent that we don't go ahead and ban this kind of speech in the first place.
Right. I think there's a very different understanding of the First Amendment or free speech that we have. I think it's a unique understanding that we have in the U.S. It's something that not many people in the world have, whether it's in the Middle East, North Africa, even in Europe, you have certain laws that have been passed, say, around Holocaust denial or anti-Semitism. So we have a very unique understanding of the First Amendment, which I think is a great thing. I think that that gives us, as Americans, this ability to really, speak our mind when it comes to social, political, and religious views. And I think what we need to do is to ensure that we're constantly engaging in talking to people and to these nascent democracies around the world so that they know what our understanding of free speech and the First Amendment is. And I think President Obama did that really well in his UN speech. He really played a balancing act.
He did play a balancing act, but some people thought he came across as just arrogant or just very dismissive of this real serious concern people in other countries have. Gary Daniels, I mean, what do you make with? Do we do enough to educate the world about who we are and what our free speech rights mean to us?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I have an obvious bias working at the ACLU, and I see that there are many times that we lecture countries about certain things, but we don't exactly have our own house in order. So while I would certainly appreciate President Obama and other American officials and dignitaries constantly, whether it's as part of a controversy or not, talking about how wonderful it is that free speech is protected to the extent that it is in the United States, I don't know sometimes that those government officials are the best people to do it, because after all, they're the ones who are in the business sometimes of restricting free speech. And so, you know, there's certainly examples in the Obama administration, the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, whether it has to do with free speech or whether it has to do with the topic we're not here to talk about, national security and the war on terror. We have to be careful that we don't lecture countries too much, like I said, when we have our house in order. But it shouldn't be done in a lecturing way, quite obviously, but it should be done in a forceful way, talking about what it is that we feel helps make our country what it is. We should not apologize for it, but it does need to be balanced with some sensitivity towards what's going on in other parts of the world.
Jerome in Marysville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Jerome.
Thank you. Some months back, a parent at the high school my child attends made some anti-Semitic comments about my family. And it led to a confrontation between some of the kids and my son. Nothing came out of it. There was no pushing, shoving, or hitting, or anything like that. But I'm wondering what the clear and present danger implications are of that. I can give you more detail if you need it.
David Goldberger?
Well, we haven't been talking about all the applicable rules under our legal system, but there are problems with fighting words. You know, when there's a face-to-face confrontation, and the rules are very different than the making of a movie or the giving of a speech or something of that nature. And it's a little bit more complicated also because it's in the context of a classroom, presumably, where there is the equivalent of basically it's almost like an office. There you have a captive audience. It strikes me, however, that and this isn't a very popular view, that sometimes you have to rely on social and public criticism of the person making the anti-Semitic or the anti-Muslim or whatever comment, as opposed to using the legal system to punish it. I think that we aren't as fragile as we think we are.
Thank you, Jerome.
Thank you.
Take
Sounds
care.
Right.
Okay. Harris, Tiran, we heard from the Muslims for Progressive Values in Columbus a little while ago, and they support the free speech rights as they stand in the United States right now. There's no question in their minds. But surely, I mean, this is the organization you represent. Is it monolithic? Does everybody agree that in the way that you described, there should be nothing like a blasphemy ban in place in the United States?
I think there are various voices out there, and I think there's a lot of different understandings, as I said, of how free speech should be expressed. But I think, you know, speaking to many American Muslims over the past couple of weeks, we've come to a realization that you know, American Muslims really cherish the idea of the First Amendment. A lot of American Muslims have come from authoritarian regimes. They've come from places where being able to speak about politics, about social issues, about religion is not something that they could do in their countries of origin. And the problem with blasphemy laws is that, you know, once you start with a law against, saying anything about a religious symbol, that leads to laws against speaking out against political issues and social issues. And so it really causes a problem in societies. And I think those American Muslims who come from authoritarian regimes understand best that it's just a slippery slope. Once you start in one area, you move on to other areas as well. And I think what we have to do is find a way to gap that cultural difference and understanding that we have. And I think American Muslims are in the best place to do that. We've been talking about that, you know, right after the film came out, we issued a series of videos in Arabic, Urdu, Farsi, Pashto, Somali, and English. And we sent it out over, you know, in the Middle East and North Africa and South Asia. You know, one of our videos got over a million views. And I think it was this idea of them understanding that, you know, American Muslims are dealing with this. American Muslims are dealing with it in the civic process. They're doing coalition building, interfaith activities. They're condemning this type of vile film. But at the same time, they're not calling for legislation or laws against the film either.
Okay, Rich in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Rich. Hi, Rich. Rich just hung up. Oh, darn it. Bridget in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Bridget.
Hi. I have a question and a comment. I question why at the beginning of the segment it was introduced by saying that the film caused the Libyan murders when Every shred of evidence now indicates that they were the result of a carefully planned terrorist attack. So that kind of made me squirm a little bit. But
I don't think I said it caused it. I think it triggered the violence.
I think the spark. But, well, okay. I don't know. I don't know if I would agree with that interpretation. But the segue into the UN First Amendment thing, I think we have to look at it in two ways. I think we should police ourselves. But to take the UN amendment and have them telling us what to do, I think would be a big mistake. And I think of the president of Iran and all the time he has cast death on the Zionists, and I wonder if the UN would, if he would be the first one prosecuted under that law. So I just hope we can handle the cultural differences and religious differences ourselves and never take a rule from the UN to take away our rights. Thank you.
Thanks, Bridget.
Now,
David Goldberger?
It's important to remember that the UN does not supersede the First Amendment. Never has and never will. And, our relationship to the UN is critical for an effective relationship to the rest of the world. But none of us lose any sleep over the possibility that if the UN passes this any blasphemy resolution, that it will change our laws. Our laws remain supreme when it comes to those kinds of issues.
An email from Michael. He writes, "While blasphemy is in the eye of the beholder, insults and language intended to cause harm to an individual or group can be more easily identified. We have libel and slander laws, but these only apply to individuals and not groups. So why is untrue speech intended to cause harm or insult to groups exempt? And why can't a law exist that would protect groups from such language without weakening protection of free speech?" David Goldberger?
This comment is there's real insight here. I don't agree with the questioner's position, he's put his finger on a point that we've kind of glossed over. What's happened in American law is that we had group libel laws, which is in essence the libeling of a group, and it's akin to blasphemy laws and so forth. And the Supreme Court in 1951 in Boharny versus Illinois upheld that law, which was not about a blasphemous film. It was about racist statements about blacks and Jews and so forth. And then Illinois, for reasons unrelated to the content of the law, it repealed the law. And then along came later cases like New York Times versus Sullivan, which changed the libel standard. To be honest, the Boharny case has never been overruled, so it's still a possibility that the court could uphold such a law. I certainly hope not, and all of the precedent since Boharny points in the other way. But the theory is that if you can libel a group and trigger and the principle is, if you can libel a group and trigger criminal punishment, you're basically punishing offenses to sensibilities. The harm that the question assumes is a harm that it makes people feel bad. And most of the time, that's not a basis for criminal liability, and it's not a basis for prosecution. Now, I may be overstating the questioner's point, but I think that gets to it.
Harris Tieran, to what extent are the videos and other educational material you've produced getting through to people in other parts of the world?
Like I said, we can only tell from the number of views and the response that we get. But we thought, this was probably the most views and the best response that we had gotten from any video that we had produced. And also, I think there is a culture of amongst a lot of young people in these very nascent democracies like Egypt and Libya and Tunisia, they don't want any limitations on free speech, to be honest with you. I mean, a lot of them, that's why they took to the streets of Tahrir, of Libya, of Tunisia and Syria. because they saw that their speech, that their actions, that their expressions were being limited by authoritarian regimes. And I would suggest that if you get some type of blasphemy laws that people see that are too limiting, you will definitely get pushback from the streets of these countries. I think a lot of young people who are yearning for freedom of expression and freedom of speech and know that they want to challenge the status quo, I think those people will eventually come out and say, we need to push back. We want to have a respectful dialogue. And I think a lot of the self-reflection is also taking place. I mean, I've read multiple pieces from various leaders, even amongst these Islamic-based political movements, like the leader of the Ennahda party in Tunisia, saying we need to be a bit more self-reflective when it comes to how we react to these cartoons, to these films. So I think a lot of that conversation is happening internally. We don't unfortunately see it on CNN and on NPR and on Fox, but it's happening. And so I think that's a good thing as well.
We have an email from Don. He says, no to the proposal. No other religion has an issue with such criticism aside from radical Islam. And I think, you know, we've mentioned earlier on in the program that that's not necessarily the case, right, David Goldberger?
Yeah, they have blasphemy laws in Ireland. They have blasphemy laws or racial hatred laws in every inciting religious hatred laws in every country that I know of.
Except
the United States.
Except for the United States. So it's not as... our law is truly uncommon, unique. And so far that I can tell, most people think we should keep it. So
I think there's a lot of people that we haven't heard from that are not so comfortable, or at least if it were their religion that were being attacked, they wouldn't be quite as accepting.
Well, maybe next time we'll hear from them. For now, I want to say thanks to Harris Terran, director of the Washington, D.C. Office of the Muslim Public Affairs Council. Thanks for joining us, Harris.
Thank you, Anne.
Also, David Goldberger, Professor Emeritus of Law at the OSU Moritz College of Law. David, thanks for joining us again.
Pleasure to be here.
And Gary Daniels, Associate Director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Ohio. Gary, thanks for being here.
Mm-hmm. And if people want to protect free speech today, ACLU.org, become a member.
All right. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.